way at all, to the best of my knowledge. We've sent press releases. We've sent all kinds of things, and they pretty much are too busy. They've not refused, but they've just been, quote, too busy.
Wow. What's coming up in the next few months? I know you still have a radio show. Are you going back to court? I know you were hassled for trying to broadcast not from the actual court room, but from the corridors and near the courthouse. What is happening?
There still is a standing court order in the North Court Injustice Center. I'm not allowed to go in that building because of a court order that Judge Prickett put out on me personally. Because if I go in that building, anywhere in that building, I'm within 100 yards of his courtroom, and that is in the court order. Also, even if I'm subpoenaed, which I have to go in from time to time to be subpoenaed as a witness in a homeless case, even when I'm subpoenaed in that courtroom, I'm not allowed to use the public phone in the building, nor am I allowed to bring a cell phone in with me. Otherwise, I would be in violation of his court order. So, you know, that is not obviously being enforced. I've been in court. I've broadcast from court. I've used the payphone. You know, I've been a real outlaw. You know, but so far they've chosen not to enforce it simply because they know that the press would be probably on my side.
But you don't really have a transmitter. You broadcast on the internet, but you haven't been doing anything in violation of, God help us, FCC regulations.
Oh, absolutely not. I'm basically, if you walk up to me in the courthouse, you see me on a cell phone like you would see any other lawyer or homeless person or whatever, you know, using a cell phone. I'm just using a cell phone to communicate to my radio station, which is in Visalia, California, and then that radio station broadcasts it on the internet.
Now, what is this stuff? Are you in fear and trembling of the FCC officials? Why have you chosen not to do some more conventional, if illegal, broadcasting, which you actually are colluding with an illegal station even as we speak?
Well, I'm not against doing, quote, illegal broadcasting. It's a matter of I guess I'll do like the ACLU. I'm too busy. I've got my hands full doing a show. I do a show on the internet, and if you'll allow me a shameless plug.
Go for it.
It's the Wiley Drake Show at www.crusaderadio.com.
Now, how many times are we going to hear Jesus' name on this particular show?
Well, it depends on the show. Sometimes you may hear it a lot. Sometimes you may not hear it at all. We operate on the basis of do justice, love mercy, and walk humbly with God. And so at a very worst, you would hear one-third religious, the other two-thirds dealing with justice and welfare. And we make no apologies for that, but at the same time, I have a lot of listeners who do not obviously agree with me theologically, but they do agree with me legally. I work as a chaplain, for example, to an organization called Ranch Rescue and the Tombstone Tumbleweed down in dealing with illegal aliens. And some of those guys are of the same bent that I am, and some aren't.
Now this is www.crusaderradio?
Just crusaderadio.com.
And the time for your broadcast is?
9 a.m. Monday through Thursday.
9 to 10 a.m. Monday through Thursday.
Yeah, 1 hour live broadcast. And by the way, we have an 800 number when you listen. If you want to call me and say I'm hearing too much about Jesus and not enough about this or that, you can call me and complain.
Oh, hey, what's the number?
1-800-839-3048.
Okay, well, who knows? You may hear my dulcet tones coming over one of these mornings.
That would be fine. Now, that 800 number is only good between 9 and 10. If you try to call it any other time, it'll just ring and ring and ring. Nothing will happen. But during the show, you call that 1-800-839-3048, and it'll say Crusade Radio, and say, put me through to the Wiley Drake Show, and they'll do that.
Hey, Wiley, I appreciate you coming on at short notice. I guess we got you hot from a church service.
Right.
And whatever you're saying in church, if you're helping people on the streets and if you're standing up against the system of injustice, my hand's out to you.
Well, thank you, my brother, and the same goes for you. I know you and I don't agree theologically or philosophically in some areas, but I do believe we believe that people that need help need to be helped, and I believe the church is the best way.
Hey, thanks for being on the air, Wiley.
Thank you much for having me.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And we're getting close to the very, very end of Bathrop Spears Broadsides. You got a time maybe for a quick call or two if you want to call in, 427-3772. Glenn here has patiently been waiting to get a word or two in edgewise, and actually perhaps just listening to this incredible tirade as we've been going on and on with one person after another. Actually, it's been a pretty interesting dialogue throughout the day. Glenn, any comments before we end the show?
Well, it was a very, very strong change in character in just the last few weeks. I don't know how my reality changed so quickly from just traveling to Central America and coming back. It's been extraordinary, a little maybe traumatic to some extent.
And of course, if you want to, Glenn, I guess you'll probably be at the, you may be at the Wednesday Huff meeting.
Yeah, I'll be doing that for a little while. I want to give you a break every so often coming up so that I'm not a dominant feature. You know, I'm 6'1", you know, just my height alone is.
And that hat, man, it looks pretty sinister. The guy's got a long cap. It looks like he's going to butt you with his cap if you give him any trouble. So you got to be careful with Glenn here.
Well, it serves a purpose, at least in the summer.
I
don't understand why people think it's more redneck instead of less redneck. I mean, it's a woman's hat to start with, you know. So.
That seems politically correct. Anyway, this has been Bathrop Spears Broadsides. Every Sunday at 9:30 until 1 o'clock, we roar at you, or grumble at you, as the case may be. And a lot of times people grumble back, as you've heard on the air. That's good. And if you got things you want to say on the air but you haven't been able to say them, call the Huff line, 423-HUFF, 423-4833, and I will forward those comments to the show. Coming up again, I hope to have this debate between Todd McCormick and Scott Imler, or I should say this discussion of the future of medical marijuana and the significance of recent federal prosecutions. McCormick is just out of jail after 4 years. Imler is on federal probation. They're going after federal clubs big time. Anita Henry may be back on Thursday. I'd kind of hoped to have her today, but apparently she wasn't able to make it. I also want to apologize to Bob Roberts, a local WAM member who has sent a letter to the city council denouncing some bad practices inside WAM, and apparently he's got some meetings scheduled with different city officials. And we're going to be having him on the air at a future show talking about WAM and some problems. WAM is Women and Men's Medical Marijuana Alliance, and that's the one club that really has any kind of legal sanction here in Santa Cruz, and which is good it does, but bad that it has is sort of the monopoly scene, and there's no, or actually it isn't even a monopoly because there's so few people that can get into it, but it is the only really club that has any sanctioned basis here. I guess MedX is, it's not really a club, it's a small service, but the main marijuana clubs, the medical marijuana clubs that were serving people are gone thanks to the Rotkin Fitzmaurice laws of 2000, and still no changes. Vice Mayor Rotkin, when are you going to get off your duff and do something? Now's your chance. Maybe it'll be up on the next city council agenda. Maybe we can hope for that. I'm going to give a call to Rotkin probably in the next few days and try to get him off the stick on this, or at least to make a statement about it. And also, of course, we're going to try to get Kennedy to take action on the sleeping ban or emergency shelter at the first meeting in January, which is January 13th. Whether we use the sweet and honey and kisses approach, recommended by one caller perhaps, or the fire and brimstone approach recommended by others, we can try as many approaches as possible. We need to get the job done. That's what counts. I was going to talk about Sacramento and Billy McManus, guy who's successfully used the necessity defense and against camping tickets. That'll happen hopefully on Thursday, maybe on Sunday next week. We come back on Thursday 6 to 8. And the Huff meeting, as I mentioned before, is it's going to be an important one. We're organizing for protests next council meeting. That's the one a week from Tuesday that will be coinciding with the One Dance Summit that's also happening. So I encourage you to be with us then. I'm going to roll into a little Shiro's Heroes from Mark Levy, my old, a folk singer locally who's never or rarely refused to come down and play for folks on the streets when we're dealing with controversial issues like telling the Pacific Trading Company to stop eliminating public space on the street and telling people to stop patronizing at the Pacific Trading Company and at Jackson's Shoes, which I continue to tell you to do, by the way, until they've changed their public policies regarding poor people and the community generally. So stay with us, or actually, you can take off now if you'd like, but come back. And if you want to check out Huff on the website, we're at www.huffsantacruz.org. Perhaps getting a bit more up to date. Thanks for being with me on this edition of Bathrobespierre's Broadsides. And Glenn, thank you for coming in.
That was a pleasure.
All righty.
Well, now you heard about Dallas and Fantasy Isle, American dream, affluent style. But Robin Leach might be surprised by what I see before my eyes, watching lifestyles of the poor and nameless, sleeping on the city street. Lifestyles of the poor and nameless, begging for a bite to eat. Lifestyles of the poor and nameless, seldom seen on your TV. Lifestyles of the poor and nameless, coming soon, you and me. Spare some change, I need a bite, just to survive is an awful fight. I spend my time collecting cans while you're out working on your tans, on lifestyles of the poor and nameless, begging for a bite to eat. Lifestyles of the poor and nameless, sleeping on a city street. Lifestyles of the poor and nameless, seldom seen on your TV. Lifestyles of the poor and nameless, coming soon to you and me. You and me. Now 30,000 children died while some politician lied. They bust the starving kid who steals while the fat cats make their sweetheart deals, on lifestyles of the poor and nameless, sleeping on a city street. Lifestyles of the poor and nameless, begging for a bite to eat. Lifestyles of the poor and nameless, seldom seen on your TV. Lifestyles of the poor and nameless, coming soon to you and me.
Robin Screech here with another thrilling episode of Lifestyles of the Poor and Nameless. Today's journey takes us to the streets of your city, where we'll visit the homeless in their native habitats. Street corners of makeshift cardboard shelters, sewer grate and doorway bedrooms, soup-lined kitchens lit by blazing oil barrel fireplaces, alleyways of the addicted, the unemployed, the destitute, the insane, eating and sleeping in the most unlikely places. It's all here on Lifestyles of the Poor and Nameless.
Now, in the ghetto, there's always room for the ethnic population boom. The melting pot boils past the brim while the people's future's looking grim, on lifestyles of the poor and nameless, begging for a bite to eat. Lifestyles of the poor and nameless, sleeping on a city street. Lifestyles of the poor and nameless, seldom seen on your TV. Lifestyles of the poor and nameless, coming soon to you and me. You and me. Lifestyles of the poor and nameless. Lifestyles of the poor and nameless. Lifestyles of the poor and nameless, coming soon.
taxes in these areas, along with the loss of land, markets, and resources, equates to the inability for communities to sustain themselves adequately and live with dignity. Goes on to describe the northern ghetto, the Jerusalem ghetto, and the southern ghetto.
Mm-hmm.
Can you talk about this, the creating of ghettos by this wall?
Yeah, I mean, it's important, I think, to understand the intent and related effects of the wall, because the objective in this is to keep as much Palestinian land while ridding Israel of the demographic issue of as many Palestinians as possible, so that by isolating Palestinians within the confines of the wall, which really is creating a sort of giant prison within Palestine, what they call ghettos on the site, has the effect of getting rid of Palestinians as much as possible. This separates Palestinians from Israel, or segregates them from Israelis. So it has a very negative kind of political intention and effect of preventing Palestinians and Israelis from coexisting on a day-to-day basis. That's the function of it politically. And, of course, the effects are extremely negative. When one is surrounded in a giant prison by a huge concrete barrier, I mean, what does that do to one's psychological outlook? What does that do to the kind of hopes of one's dreams just as a child? I mean, it has very negative effects on Palestinians internally and also on Palestinian-Israeli interaction at large.
They mentioned on the website as well that the Gaza Strip essentially is in the same boat and has been for a long time because it's surrounded by a wall and is completely isolated. And my understanding is that the Gaza Strip, there's about 1.3 million Palestinians living in there in about one-third of the area. The other two-thirds is for about, I think, 6,000 Jewish settlers. Is that accurate?
That's right. It's about 7,000 Jewish settlers.
And about 1.3 million Palestinians, and the 6,000 or 7,000 settlers control two-thirds of the Gaza Strip, isn't that right?
No, that's exactly right. And in fact, the Gaza Strip is the most densely populated place on the planet Earth, and it's children in the Gaza Strip suffer from malnutrition and from these kind of same effects that are now being created in the West Bank. Israel, unfortunately, holds up the Gaza Strip as a model case in terms of what the wall is intended to achieve in the West Bank. But, in fact, if this is the model case, then the kind of suffering that goes on in the West Bank is going to parallel that of the Gaza Strip. And it's not even just land space that Israel settlers in the Gaza Strip control. They also have control over water. They have control over some of the other physical... beauties and things that are in the West, in the Gaza Strip. So it's really a system. They have much more access to water, and the Palestinians don't have the same kind of access. So it's also distributing water and land in a much more discriminatory fashion in the Gaza Strip, and they want to achieve the same thing in the West Bank.
Which actually, like you pointed out earlier, would simply fuel hatred and terrorism. My understanding is that the Gaza Strip is the home to most of that terrorist activity. Am I wrong?
No, the Gaza Strip, Hamas does have its strongest presence in the Gaza Strip. And, I mean, it's a very clearly cause-and-effect relationship between the kind of suffering and the kind of human day-to-day life that the people in the Gaza Strip have to go through, and then the kind of radicalism that they then espouse in terms of their relationship with Israel. So it's obviously not a successful approach, if even curbing security is the rationale behind the wall and behind the treatment of Palestinians within Gaza itself.
We have about 5 minutes left. What would be a successful approach? Can you suggest an alternative, I guess, or your vision of what would be a just solution and a fair solution that would ensure security for both Israelis and Palestinians and have a positive outcome rather than this horrible situation that they're in now?
Sure. I mean, it's actually very simple. I mean, the ingredients are the same as they are in every other place on the planet. People deserve to be free, and they deserve to live as equals. And the Palestinians who have lived now under occupation for 36 years are tired of living under occupation. They're tired of seeing a foreign military government in their lives every single day. What has to happen is that Israel has to end its occupation, plain and simple. And then within Israel and to the refugees, it has to give them equal rights that Israeli Jews have, so that any Jew from around the world can come to Israel and live there even if they've never seen it or if they've never been there in the first place. But Palestinian refugees who may have been there just 50 years ago are prevented from doing so for no other reason than that they're Arab or Muslim or Christian. So that it's really freedom for the West Bank and Gaza Palestinians and equality for the Palestinian refugees as well as for the Palestinian citizens of Israel, who I should add are also discriminated against. But that's highly underreported in this country, unfortunately.
What should Americans do? What role does our government play, and what can we do to change the policy?
Excuse me. Our government, unfortunately, has been giving Israel $3 billion in military and economic aid for the last almost 30 years. It's high time that the United States and that the American taxpayer start to put pressure on their elected representatives to stop this kind of a situation. Israel has to be held accountable for occupying other people and for settling on their land in a discriminatory fashion. There has to be some sense of accountability, not in a way that's hostile to Israel. On the contrary, in a way that supports its peace movement, which has been calling for accountability on behalf of the Israeli government and on behalf of the Israeli people. So I think that the American taxpayer has to really be engaged and involved in this situation. And in terms of just concrete, you know, suggestions, they can visit our website at AmericansForPalestine.org. There's other great websites. Just become informed, like ElectronicIntifada.org or StopTheWall.org or EndTheOccupation.org. So there's, I think, becoming informed and then using that information as a tool to engage members of Congress and elected representatives and just people who make decisions in the society at large.
Thanks so much for joining me today, George.
Thank you, Sarah. I really appreciate it.
Have a great day.
Yeah, you too.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
And you're tuned to 96.3 Free Radio Santa Cruz. I was speaking with George Najjar. He is president of the American Association for Palestinian Equal Rights. He is also a lawyer by trade. He holds a law degree from Georgetown University School of Law, where he specialized in the international law of human rights and armed conflict. George holds a Bachelor of Arts in Political Science and History from Rutgers, the State University of New Jersey. I was very pleased to have him joining me today. I'm going to give out a few websites for those of you who want more information, so get ready to write these down. Some Israeli websites in addition to some of the ones you just heard. StopTheWall.org was one that Mr. Najjar pointed out, as well as ElectronicIntifada.net, PalestineMonitor.org, and the website for the American Association for Palestinian Equal Rights is aaper.org. aaper.org. And here's some Israeli sites. There is a resistance movement among Israeli soldiers calling for an end to the occupation of the West Bank and Gaza. And one of their support groups is Yesh Gavul. And their website is YESHGVUL.org. That's YESHGVUL.org. YeshGavul.org. There's also an Israeli peace group that has an excellent site with a lot of information on the wall as well as conditions in the occupied territories, and their website is GushShalom.org. That's spelled GUSHSHALOM.org. GushShalom.org. And then there's the final one here, B'Tselem, which is a Israeli human rights group, an excellent website, highly recommend it, btselem.org, B'Tselem, and their website again, btselem.org. Thanks for listening.
Oh, just remember. Till we remember we are a wildland. While we're out there driving this new century on its way, and we're out there striving in Babylon every day. the new world now. We're evolving, changing our minds, and we know how. We're eliminating racism, war, and poverty, because we're creating human rights and dignity. So just remember peace, my friend. It cannot come till we remember we are one. It cannot come till we remember we are one, one, one. Just remember peace, my friend. It cannot come till we remember we are one. It cannot come till we remember we are one. Can only come through justice. Can only come through equality. Always exists in our hearts. Oh, always exists in our minds. Just remember peace, peace, my friend. I cannot come till we remember we are one. I cannot come till we remember we are one, one, one. Yeah, remember peace, my friend. Come till we remember we are one. It cannot come till we remember we are one. Yeah, we're out there driving this new century on its way. We're out there striving in Babylon every day. And then we're planting the seeds of a new world now. And we're evolving, changing our minds, and we know how. We're eliminating racism, war, and poverty, while we're creating human rights and dignity. But just remember peace, peace, my friend. I cannot come till we remember we are one. I cannot come till we remember we are one. One, one, yeah, remember peace, my friend. I cannot come till we remember we are one. I cannot come till we remember we are one. Can only come through justice. Can only come through equality. Always exists in our hearts. Oh, always exists in our minds. Always exists in our hearts. Oh, peace. Always exists in our minds. Come till we remember we are one. I cannot come till we remember we are one, one, one. Yeah, remember peace, peace, my friend. I cannot come till we remember we are one. I cannot come till we remember we are one, one, one. Yeah, remember peace, peace, my friend. I cannot come till we remember we are one. I cannot come till we remember we are one. We are one.
Israel has carried out a 35-year occupation, which has been brutal, violent, harsh, destructive from the start. That does not justify Palestinian terrorist acts or the more extreme Israeli terrorist acts, which continue. But it's just there's just no way to make to compare it in any sensible fashion.
I'm Ghada Muna from Jerusalem, from Palestine, Israel. When I am about 11 years, my brother, his name Nader, he's old, 19. He's finished high school. Suddenly we didn't know what happened in Ramallah. Some Israeli, some problems killed him. And we don't know what happened. afternoon in the same day, all the Jewish, the soldiers come to the house and told us, your son died. And now we must search on his personal things. They making the house like something terrible. Everything go fell down. Where is he? But we told him that we don't know what happened. Why all of this? After that, they told us he died.
I first came here in April. Hundreds of houses are gone now. Every day the landscape changes from inhabited to ravaged to barren. Those whose houses have not yet been demolished have left because it's too dangerous. I saw only one person in this area of Blanco today, an elderly man walking on mud flats in order to avoid the sewage invading his home. After the doctor examined the body of a man that the Israeli military killed in Bethlehem this week, it was discovered that he did not die from a bullet wound. He instead died when Israeli soldiers tied him to their jeep and drove off, dragging him behind.
I'm working in the RNC at the moment as a volunteer. I'm also an organizer for the Palestinian International Solidarity Movement. Just as I'm speaking to you, some gunfights have just erupted.
Nothing happened in Ramallah. Nothing happened in Jenin. Only shit-smeared walls and smashed computers. Only jewelry, photos, painfully saved for years, ripped out of hiding places, children's clothes tipped out of drawers, drenched in powerful jets of IDF urine. Let's hear from that man of peace, Sharon. Palestinians are beasts on two legs. And beasts are meant to be plundered. Dismembered. Let's hear from the young Israeli soldiers. It's easy for you to judge us from New York, San Francisco. Take your filthy cameras, your prying, horrified eyes. Take your hearts that bleed for nothing. We are defending our country, and this is a war. Nothing happened in Ramallah. Nothing happened in Jenin. Only young men, street by street, rounded up, stripped, rifle whipped. Only the occasional smashed ankle, broken rib, and be grateful we didn't kill you, you filth. Only young men, house by house, swallowed into the night. Women left crying in the ruins of bulldozed homes. Only voices from under the rubble on dying cell phones. Help us. In God's name, anyone in the world, if you can hear us, send us help. Only bodies tumbled like urine-soaked clothes in the hospital corridors as the lights flickered and died. Only graves dug by lacerated hands in parking lots. And you wonder, did the Palestinians never hear how Jewish bodies buried unbagged in Buchenwald, Theresienstadt, swelled with gas and exploded out of the ground? But that just goes to show, the Likud is right. The West Bank invaders are right. They are a dirty, illiterate people. Carpet bomb them into fertilizer. Nothing happened in Ramallah. Nothing happened in Jenin. Only ambulances halted at checkpoints laden with useless blood. Only aid workers pleading to bring in food and water. Only prying journalists, misguided UN observers, held at gunpoint, denied entry because there's nothing to see. While Colin Powell cruised through Egypt and Morocco, one hand over his eyes, another over his mouth, dates stuffed in his ears. A three-monkey ensemble at Jerusalem banquets, Powell heard no evidence of massacre. Powell saw no need to visit the West Bank. Powell didn't mention the Geneva Convention, the International Declaration of Human Rights, every UN resolution calling for Israeli withdrawal since 1967, because, don't you see, nothing happened in Ramallah. Nothing happened in Jenin. Powell saw no evidence, and we are all good, quiet Germans now.
They didn't have any mercy. They didn't believe in God. Look what the Israeli army doing with us, and they looking without any. He cannot speak what he feels. Pray to God, only to God to help him. Yes, he wants his own house with his own neighbors, as usually, as he live in it. About 45 years he live in this house, and he wants his neighbor.
The Palestinians, there's plenty of violence and terror on both sides, which is awful and no way to justify it. But the fact is, the Palestinians have been under military occupation for 35 years. It has been harsh and brutal and violent throughout, racist, humiliating, destructive. It has been backed entirely by the United States unilaterally. It includes expansion of settlement into the occupied territories. It was actually Barack in his last year broke all records since Oslo, always supported by the United States. There's just no symmetry. And in the diplomatic scene, the problem is, I mean, there is plenty of criticism you can make about the Arab states. In fact, it's hard to think of anything nice to say about them. But the fact of the matter is that what has been blocking what is now the Saudi Arabian plan is unilateral U.S.-Israeli opposition.
There is a child in the camp at Rafah who does not talk. When the tanks come, they roar like deafening avalanches of hate. All day his hands fly, miming gun, tank, collapsing walls, the way blood flows out of the dying. A silent child, finger painting the shape of occupation onto the dust-filled air. Soundless, while the shadows of his hands flicker across walls pierced with the holes of bullets and shells as cratered as the dark face of the moon. Why should he speak? Everything else is shouting. Another morning, 1969, Chicago, the phone rings at dawn. My father is asked to come bear witness to a door. He and two others, middle-aged, middle-class, white, cross the border into the war zone. In the early light, every splintered edge of a bullet hole is clear, every trajectory leaving its line of smoke in the air, from the hallway, through the thin wood, through two rebel bodies grown cold in police custody, through the blood-soaked mattresses into the floor. This is what they have been brought to see. Later, official lies will reverse the direction of this murder, claim that it was the sleeping dead who fired first, not the crouched policeman armed to the teeth, trigger-fingered in the empty stairs. But more than 30 years after he came home for breakfast, I still remember the voice of Fred Hampton's door in my father's eyes, speaking for itself. These days, my poems cannot keep up with the names I must add to my endless Kaddish of slaughter, whose spelling I must look up, because although I can spell entrepreneur, I have never learned how to write the names of Iraqi children, Palestinian mothers, Nigerian teenage subjects of the Corpo Nation of Chevron, Afghani babies, indigenous nations choking on refinery fumes in Venezuela, where suddenly another overthrow threatens another president who won't play with the bandits, who won't give away the oil. The networks jack up our fear to fuel our crooked king, our rogue nation bent on war, no matter who complies or does not, no matter what anyone says, screeching that the rebel self-determination of Cuba, Venezuela, and Brazil, threatening to feed their people instead of the bandit shareholders, is yet another axis of evil, ready to steal the bread out of our mouths if we let them. Newsmakers make a mini-series of two snipers in the suburbs of D.C., while the king and his ministers suggest nuking Iraq may not be out of place. And don't find it newsworthy that more people died this year of gunshot killings in Oakland than in the entire country of Japan. While they issue vague warnings about bioweapons and bombs, we are already inhaling the anesthetic gases of psychoterror intended to keep us from seeing the faces behind the guns, intended to keep us from bearing witness to what the world needs us to see. I am a poet walking in the dark with nothing but my will to be another voice, unable to keep up with headlines and menacing reports, doing what I know to do, which is to listen for stories like shards of glass radiating outward from where something has exploded, the ones that teach me names of real people in the presence of bullet holes, the ones that teach me the exact shape of war on a child's fingertips, the ones that speak for themselves.
One of them, his name is Diana Dara Zarafa. She said they didn't belong to any group, only civilians. They worked all the time in building and they didn't, if they killed them, out of the house, is not they killed them in, between her eyes. And now when I asked her, she remembered that she started crying. The Israelis took our land, took all what, and now they destroyed also our camp. This is another Nakba to us.
What does Nakba mean? Catastrophe, right?
Yeah.
The catastrophe in 1948, no?
Yeah. This is now also another transfer.
How many transfers do you think they'll do until they stop?
With Sharon government, no, they didn't have any hope with the Sharon government like that. Because you see in your eyes what he make here in the camp.
Yeah.